podcast is brought to you by DIA, the trusted global neutral forum for healthcare product development professionals. DIA, driving insights to action.
The World Health Organization's Essential Medicines and Health Product Strategic Framework for 2016 to 2030 is titled Towards Access 2030. And it aims to strategically focus the WHO's ability to help member states achieve universal access to safe and quality-assured health products. The recent DIA Europe 2018 annual meeting in Basel, Switzerland, featured a special WHO Swiss Medics signature session. It was titled Toward Access 2030, How Can Strengthening of Regulatory Systems Contribute? I am Alberto Grignolo, editor of DIA Global Forum. Today, my two guests are the co-chairs of this session, and they are here to continue that conversation. Dr. Petra Dürr, Deputy Executive Director of Swissmedic. Welcome, Petra.
Welcome, Alberto.
And Dr. Murray Lumpkin, Deputy Director of Regulatory Affairs and Lead for Global Regulatory Systems Initiatives for the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, and a former senior official at the US FDA for many years, as well as an expert in international regulatory systems. Welcome, Mac.
Hi, Alberto.
Petra, if I may ask you the first question, what does strengthening regulatory systems actually mean? What is being made stronger, by whom, and how?
You mentioned in the beginning the strategic framework that the WHO published on access to medicines and the aspects that relate to regulatory system strengthening. There is also a separate World Health Assembly resolution on regulatory system strengthening dating back to 2014. Which details the activities that are directed to member states, to the WHO, regarding this aspect. So in this resolution, you will find a number of measures that have been defined, and some of them are related to member states' strengthening of regulatory systems. For example, applying the benchmarking tool of the WHO to evaluate the systems that are currently in place and to identify the gaps. It also includes then addressing these gaps by posing an institutional development plan, and then based on this plan, work on closing the gap. But it has also aspects around provision of technical support to national regulatory authorities. This would be more addressed to stringent, as they were called before, now listed regulatory authorities, such as Swissmedic, to support regulatory authorities in low- and middle-income countries to strengthen their systems. But it also involves strengthening of basic standards and guidelines that need to be harmonized across the different legislations. And this is a basis then for a next level of cooperation, which is also essential in strengthening of regulatory systems, which then leads to options of relying on other regulators' work and sharing the workload. So strengthening of regulatory systems can mean a lot of things, and many measures are being put in place, and some of them have been discussed also at the session at DIA in Basel.
Thank you, Petra. Mac, if I may ask you to weigh in, is this effort of strengthening regulatory systems being driven by WHO, or is it facilitated by WHO, considering the autonomy of individual countries? How is this being driven, in what way, by WHO?
Thanks, Alberto. I think that's a very important point that you bring up, and that is really the process for doing regulatory strengthening and capacity building. And I think many of us in the past had the experience where you felt like the various activities were very ad hoc. They felt very much like you were parachuting into a situation and then coming out. And they felt very uncoordinated. And really, the question was, to what end and to what purpose were these activities being done? And I think one of the things that WHO has done now is to say, this needs to be coordinated. That clearly there are people, as Petra was saying, in many institutions around the world, both the listed regulatory authorities that Petra mentioned and others, who have the capability of offering their technical training. But what WHO is doing now through its coalition of interested partners is saying, we need to do this in a coordinated way. We need to have a goal that the country who is the focus of the activities has said, this is our goal. This is where we want to go. This is the capacity we feel like we need to have at this point in time. And as Petra said, there is a plan that is developed so that everybody knows what the goal is, what their role is in the plan, so that there really is a systematized process here for doing regulatory system strengthening. And that really is the focus of WHO, and is a role that WHO, I think, is uniquely poised to play.
And if I may follow up just quickly, Mac, with a more specific point, are countries in general willing to participate in this effort? Are there any barriers, roadblocks, resource constraints to participating in this effort from the perspective of individual countries?
Well, I think there have been a goodly number of countries now who have availed themselves of the opportunity, as Petra mentioned, to use the global benchmarking tool to try to assess themselves to see where they are when it comes to various regulatory strengths and capacities, where they have gaps and need to be improved. There are times where there are resource constraints as far as who can provide the training at a given point in time. But I think the larger community is looking at this as a much better coordinated, goal-oriented, focused undertaking that many in the community are willing to help provide technical resources, such as Petra was mentioning with SwissMedic, or financial resources, which we do at the foundation. And there are others who obviously are part of this process going forward.
Petra, let me come back to you. You are a regulator, of course. Can stronger regulatory systems increase the productivity of regulators, particularly regulators that may have limited resources or be constrained in some other way? So how can the productivity of regulators be strengthened through these stronger regulatory systems?
Yeah, I think the focus of all these activities should be on two aspects: to increase the efficiency, meaning doing the things in the right way, and then also to increase effectiveness to do the right things. And if you look at these two aspects, I think the measures and the activities that are dealing with systems strengthening in the regulatory arena, they should contribute to these two goals, to increase efficiency or effectiveness of regulators. I wouldn't necessarily use the word productivity. These measures to increase efficiency and effectiveness, I think these are required by all regulators around the world. We talk about low and middle income countries, but if you look at SwissMedic, we have limited resources as well, although they may be huge compared with some of the small countries' regulatory authorities. We have our limitations as well. So we also need to look at which activities are strategically important for us, which resources do we invest in activities that contribute to either access or that contribute to reducing the risk for patients. So this is the kind of strategic approach that you have to take as a regulator, looking at strengthening your regulatory system. And it always has to be driven by an objective, by a goal that you want to achieve. And it's also determined by the kind of environment that you are in. Because if you don't have production facilities in your country, why would you then set up a system to do GMP inspections? You could rather rely on other market surveillance activities, build these capacities in certain market surveillance activities, and rely on GMP inspections that have been performed by other recognized regulatory authorities. So by this kind of prioritization and defining where to rely these activities, this would contribute then to the overall productivity of the regulator.
You're, of course, referring, I believe, to the concept of regulatory reliance that has really emerged in recent years. Perhaps you could comment on the consortium of which SwissMedic has been a part for the last several years, including four countries, and what that consortium is achieving.
I think the consortium, from the beginning, it was called the work-sharing consortium. So another term that we are using, because reliance, in my personal view, it's not really a definition. I know there are definitions that are being developed now also by the World Health Organization, is something that happens at the time when an initial assessment or inspection has already been performed. And we talk about work sharing in the sense of real-time work sharing. meaning we distribute the workload between the four regulatory authorities, being the Australian TGA, Canadian Authority, the Health Products and Food Branch, Singapore's Health Sciences Authority, and Swissmedic. We distribute the workload amongst ourselves and then rely on the component that has been done by one of us. So there was a generic medicines work sharing trial that was also presented at the DIA in Basel, where the Australian TGA did the initial assessment and Health Canada and Swissmedic relied on this initial assessment and just did a peer review on the initial assessment report performed by TGA. So this helps us then to reduce our individual workload.
Was the work of the consortium so far successful in your opinion? And can one expect that more such examples will come to the surface in coming years?
We would hope so. Yeah, I think that work sharing trial in the area of generics was successful. For example, for Swissmedic, we were able to almost have we needed half of the time for granting the approval compared to our regular marketing authorization procedure for generics. That's a success for us, but it's also a success for the applicant. And I think we would like to continue, would like to see more of these work sharing activities also in the area of new chemical entities and biosimilars. This depends on the interest that would come from the applicants, from the companies to use these possibilities within the consortium.
To follow up on that, Petra, should companies be confident that the confidentiality of their information and intellectual property would be protected adequately in these work sharing frameworks and environments?
I would say definitely yes. Within the four agencies that we're looking at, we amongst ourselves, we have confidentiality agreements in place between all four members, and also the systems that are in place regarding protection of IP are quite reliable. So yes, companies should be confident.
Mac, of course, you have been a regulator for many, many years, and you're now in the foundation. From your perspective, can these stronger regulatory systems improve the efficiency of the work, as Petra was calling it, rather than productivity? What is your point of view on these arrangements?
I think what we are all beginning to recognize is that clearly the products that we oversee are products that have evolved from primarily locally manufactured products to being global commodities. And in the same way, the regulatory process over the last several decades has evolved from being really locally focused enterprise into really being a global enterprise. And I think what you're seeing is that regulators, as Petra was saying, all along the spectrum, whether they are in high-income countries or middle or low-income countries, are all recognizing that they are part of this global enterprise and that being part of the global enterprise has certain responsibilities, but it also has certain real benefits. And one of them is, I think, as you were saying, is that people can look at their resources and ask themselves, what are the value added activities that I can do? And I think people realize that there's certain activities that every regulatory agency has to do for itself. They really cannot rely on others. And those are things such as local pharmacovigilance, trying to make sure that your local market supply chain is secure. As Petra mentioned, local manufacturing and overseeing local manufacturing. But beyond that, as we've been talking, this whole idea of regulation through reliance, regulation through regionalization, through networks, is something that is continuing to evolve. And, you know, we've seen it here in Europe, for example, with the EMA and what has happened in Europe and the European network and how that has brought efficiency, how it has brought a lot of value to the work that the individual national regulatory authorities are doing through the network that exists there. And we see efforts being made in the Caribbean, being made in different African regional economic communities in Southeast Asia to try to emulate many of the same benefits of working together as a network, looking at what are the value added activities that each agency can do, both as far as its own jurisdiction is concerned, but even more importantly, as far as how they participate in the global regulatory enterprise.
From the point of view of an individual country agency, for example, what is the risk that a medicine that has been sort of approved by relying in part on the assessment of other agencies will pose a risk or will be associated with some sort of a problem in that country? How does the local regulatory agency justify having relied on the inputs of other agencies who obviously do not regulate the country in question where the problem perhaps has surfaced? How does a local agency, you know, deal with that sort of situation?
Number one, I think we all realize that at the time a product is authorized, there is only a limited amount of data and knowledge that one has. And that is true whether one does the entire review themselves or whether one relies on part of the review being done by others, and that we will continue to learn about products as it goes forward. And this is a message that I think we are always, as regulators and as the regulated industry and as consumers, always have to be putting out there, is that we will continue to learn, and this is part of the entire process going forward. What you want to make sure is that you have systems in place that when new knowledge is learned, that indeed that knowledge can be brought back into the benefit risk profile of the product and the decision-making process to decide whether indeed your people are tolerant of the risks that you now know about the product. So I think, you know, the issue is really, how do you use your resources in the most value-added way for public health within your own country? And that means to do your job as best as possible, not using precious resources to redundantly repeat what someone else has done, but using your resources, as I mentioned, for those things that really only a regulator within that country can do. And then put the decision-making together using the information that you have from trusted authorities around the world. And I think, you know, this is not unique to the pharmaceutical sector. This is the way airline safety is done around the world. This is the way shipping safety is done around the world. You know, we're talking about global enterprises here, and the overall safety, efficacy of the products is done now in a global context, whether it's pharmaceuticals, whether it's other sectors.
Petra, coming back to you on the same topic, you are the Swiss regulator. So what is your level of comfort as an agency that is there to protect and promote the health of the people of Switzerland? Relying on the review of another regulatory agency does not really absolve you of the responsibility that you have to the people of Switzerland. You couldn't very well say to your people, well, we didn't look at the safety of the drug because another agency looked at it. You wouldn't want to be in that position, presumably.
I think in Switzerland we are in a good situation, as the legislator has provided us with provisions in our basic act that kind of mandate us or allow us, as you would like to see it, to rely on scientific assessments or, for example, evaluations, GMP inspections. It's not that explicit in the act, but the concept of reliance is included in our act. Ideally, you have a legal basis for reliance. What we also have to keep in mind is that reliance is still a voluntary concept. It means that a regulator that relies on the assessment, for example, of another regulatory authority would still take its own decision based on this assessment, rather than when you look at recognition, it's more or less automatic. So in a reliance concept, you can also, if you have serious concerns, when looking at the assessment that another regulator has done, you can still do your own assessment and then take your decision based on this own assessment. And then also, I think if you look at reliance, it would be helpful if you don't have a legal basis for reliance to look at a WHO guideline that would detail how reliance could be applied, how reliance is a best practice that should be used. And to my knowledge, such a guideline is being developed by WHO at this point in time. But maybe Mac can confirm this and provide a bit more details.
I think, as Petra said, the idea of reliance is really now becoming recognized as a 21st century best regulatory practice. That, as Petra mentioned earlier, every agency, from the best resourced agencies to the most challenged agencies when it comes to resources, are employing this to greater and lesser degrees. And because of this, as Petra mentioned, WHO is in the process of creating an annex to their good regulatory practices document, which would be a good reliance practices annex that talks about what are the good reliance practices and what would an agency need to do to be able to show that they had used reliance in ways that follow what are considered the best practices at this point in time.
For a regulator, I think it is important to keep in mind that reliance should be based on a certain level of confidence, which is being established by the other regulator applying international guidelines. To have regulatory systems that are at a level that allows the regulator to rely on. So I think this is an important component, that you have criteria for regulators to be trusted regulators that others can rely on.
So there needs to be a foundation of trust and confidence, I believe that's what you're saying.
Yes, based on international standards, on harmonized standards.
Let me move to the important topic of patient access to medicines, because in the end, that's what regulatory systems presumably are all about. And I recall that during the session in Basel, the chief executive officer of the Food and Drug Authority of Ghana, Mrs. Mimi Darko, made the point that access to medicines depends on two things, availability and affordability. So the question to you both is, how will making regulatory systems stronger, how will it improve patient access to medicines? Petra, perhaps you could start.
I think stronger regulatory systems, including all the aspects that have been discussing, would lead to hopefully faster access to medicines for patients. It would probably also motivate companies to submit applications for marketing authorizations if the process is more efficient and the systems are more effective. So this would increase access, it would improve access to medicines in these countries. But I think strengthening of regulatory systems would not only include the component of initial marketing authorization, it would also include capacity building in other areas, like Mac already mentioned, in market surveillance activities, in production oversight, in also maintaining marketing authorizations variations, which is also a great concern of companies, an emerging concern, let's say, of companies, not only the initial access, but also maintaining marketing authorizations. So through this strengthening of regulatory systems, access can be improved. It can also be maintained over time if good systems are in place.
Mac, from your point of view on this question of availability and affordability, some regulators do encompass both the regulatory approval and the reimbursement approval. The Italian AIFA comes to mind. Others do not. From your perspective, how does one balance or combine in some way availability and affordability to ensure patient access to medicines?
The first point here on this discussion, Alberto, is that when we talk about patient access to medicine, particularly in the parts of the world that we at the foundation focus on, the question is not only patient access to medicine, but really patient access to quality medicine. And it is this fundamental issue of trying to assure that the medicines that patients have access to indeed are quality medicines that have the right amount of the right moiety in them, that is really, I think, one of the strongest reasons that we're interested in having stronger, more effective regulators. Because in much of the world that we focus on, the real public health problem of substandard and falsified medicines is a huge public health problem. And so the first thing when you're talking about availability, to us, it's availability of quality medicines. And then there is making sure that those quality medicines are affordable so that indeed patients do have access to them. Now, you know, this issue of affordability is one that is multifactorial and is quite different in many of the jurisdictions around the world. I think from a principal perspective, there are ways that, particularly in the low-income countries, we're seeing efforts through various procurers, through various guaranteed purchase plans that indeed many of the life-saving products can be made available. More and more, as we're seeing in the high-income countries, as we get into very highly personalized medicines and into medicines for very unique orphan and niche indications, the cost implications are going to continue to be a very, very large issue, not only for low-income countries, but even for high-income countries. But it still fundamentally can't happen unless you've got access to quality medicines, and you and the practitioners can rest assured that the medicines that you are using indeed are quality medicines that you can depend on.
What are your thoughts, Petra, on how perhaps to make sure that a regulatory approval is going to be coupled in some way with affordability to individual patients?
Yeah, I don't know if it can be coupled. Maybe it can be looked at. I remember a model from Australia where, for example, regulatory approval and discussions about health technology assessment and reimbursement run in parallel. And once a regulatory approval is available, then immediately thereafter, a decision can be taken about the reimbursement of the product. So I think these kinds of models could maybe help in improving the access, meaning giving faster access to patients. But this is now an example of a country that has a well-developed regulatory system. So I don't know if it can be used as an example for other countries, low- and middle-income countries, where usually you wouldn't have a health technology assessment body or even a health insurance. So my message would be the access topic, I think, like WHO is proposing with their strategy towards Access 2030, is a multidimensional, multifaceted issue, and it has been looked at in all aspects.
Is improved patient access to medicines the only goal of strengthening regulatory systems, or are there any other goals, and what are they?
Well, I think clearly the final goal of it is indeed to assure that the medicines that patients need are indeed available in the country, and that they are indeed the quality medicines that they can depend on and their practitioners can depend on. And that's really what the regulatory system is there in all its dimensions to do. How it does it can vary from country to country. We talked about the different elements of the global regulatory enterprise that different jurisdictions are participating in at this point in time. But I think at the end of the day, if indeed patients and practitioners do not feel confident in the medicines that they have access to, that the regulatory system cannot say it's done its job.
Petra, from your point of view, final word on other goals on strengthening regulatory systems beyond providing patient access to medicines.
I think there's a component of building capacity and know-how and streamlining processes, which would also probably lead to benefits for pharmaceutical industry or medical products industry by reducing regulatory burden. By having more harmonized approaches, more harmonized requirements, I think this would also be a goal that could be achieved with strengthening of regulatory systems. Looking at the kind of scientific development, the technology that's developing, the new areas that are being looked at by the companies, I think it's also important for all regulators, including the most developed regulators, to maintain the know-how and the capacity to review and have oversight over these products and to review applications that come in for these new types of products.
Is it because any regulatory agency in any country, any jurisdiction, should be able to handle the same issues as any other agency? For example, big data, machine learning, artificial intelligence, real-world evidence, electronic health records. Presumably, in principle, every jurisdiction in the world should be able to have access to this information, know how to deal with it, know how to use it in regulatory decisions. Is that fair enough?
I would be cautious by saying every jurisdiction. I think this would be contradicting ourselves if we talk about options to rely to share workload, etc. So there may be regulatory authorities that would be more well equipped to deal with these groundbreaking technologies.
That brings us to the end of our time together. Petra Durr, thank you very much for being with us today and sharing your insights as a current regulator.
Thank you, Alberto.
And Mac, thank you very much for being with us and, as always, sharing your tremendous insights and global perspectives. Thank you both for being with us today. For DIA Global Forum, I am Alberto Grignolo.
To learn more about this topic, visit us online at diaglobal.org.